Blog Talk Radio.
I'm so excited, but kind of scared too. But check this out. I can't believe it. This is the night, March 1st, 2021. I can't believe we got a great show today. We got Spooky Lou on the line right now, and he's going to introduce a super show to us. I'm not going to say what it is until he gets on. But I want to thank all your listeners out there, both live and also all you future listeners from the future. Thanks for downloading the show. Please share it. I just want to give a shout out. Up and coming challenger in the ratings is Japan. I can't believe it. Somewhere in Japan, is it Tainos or people really interested in Taino radio.com? And check this out, believe it or not, the Netherlands, Belgium, they're still in there. They're still in there, you know. And the Caribbean, of course, Jamaica. You're in fourth place, Jamaica. You're doing well, downloading our shows, listening. Please call on in if you're available, Jamaica. Jamaica. We got Quisqueya La Bella always hooking us up. Also, Borinquen, Turtle Island. Man, you guys are really awesome. I can't forget Morocco. Morocco, thank you. Every week you're downloading the show. I see the stats. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So many countries have been tuning in. Australia, Russia. This is unreal. I'd like to thank all of you. Bosnia, you're never behind. You're always there, hanging in there. Bosnia, Italy. That's right, Italy. Yo, I got some emails from Italy. I'm trying to get them to call in. We'll get them in. We'll get them in. So this is TainoRadio.com. I'd like to thank everyone once again. And today I'd like to introduce I'd like to introduce Spooky Lou all the way from Area 51, Nevada. Spooky Lou, are you there?
I am here. What's going on, everyone? How's everyone feeling tonight? Hopefully well, excited, pumped up for this exciting show. We're definitely going to speak about one of my favorite topics called, of course, Bigfoot, a.k.a. Sasquatch, many different names depending on what part of the country you're from, right? Like
awesome.
The Himalayas. Yeah, absolutely. I also hear that we might have a special guest. Am I correct?
Right now, well, before we get to the guest, we got a super person on the line. Okay, she's been with us for a while, but guess what? She's using her Taino name, Inaru Boria, formerly known as Stephanie Sky. Are you there?
Hey, Sanakori.
Inaru
hey,
Boria.
Well, she's always the special guest.
That's right, man. She's always in the studio, man. That's great. That's great. Always working on the shows, checking us out, you know. But check it out. We have a special guest all the way from the great state of Pennsylvania, I believe. Guyaya Koo.
Tao. Taino T. Hello, everyone.
Taino T. This is my brother. This is my boy right here all the way from... Wow, from the 90s, right? We met in the 90s, right? So
yeah, yep. You're part of that blue road thing that I was talking about last week.
Oh man, that was deep. That was deep. And listen, you're back today. You know, Spooky Lou, man, he's gonna get down with the new topic today. But listen, we're glad you're back. And there's some other people that send me some sound that I will see if I can play later on of this special topic we're gonna discuss today. But Spooky Lou, take it away, and I'll be screening some calls later. Take it away.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate the introduction. I'm also excited about the special guest. I know last time you had an amazing story, so I can't wait to hear this story. But today, we're going to talk about Bigfoot. Of course, like I said, it comes in many different names, Sasquatch. And like I said, depending around the world where you're at, you know, like the Himalayas, you know, it's called Yeti or the Amistee in Central Asia, or Sasquatch in North America. People for years, I mean, so many years, have been reporting seeing a giant man that looks like an ape running around the woods pretty much naked. But luckily he's hairy, so I don't know if that helps. So anyways, this is a really interesting topic because a lot of people do believe, a lot of people do not believe. Personally, I'm in between with this topic. And there's so many legends, Native American legends, that date back thousands of years reporting of sightings and early first settlers as well. So with that said, Creepy Steph, what are your thoughts on this topic tonight?
Well, I can't say I've ever witnessed it myself. I have heard of it often. Because, you know, creepy stuff is kind of inevitable. I catch all the creepy stuff. In that middle realm of maybe, maybe not. But I'm really interested to hear what everybody has to say. Huh?
It's a tough one. I agree.
It definitely is. It's,
you know.
It's definitely a tough one. I have to agree with you. I'm in the middle on it. I'm on the fence of whether it is or it isn't. I know that there has been some people that you know, they've shared stories that sound and depictions. Honestly, depictions is what gets me, the real life vivid pieces of information that they provide that allow you to create that realistic vision in your head when they, you know, talk to you about it. So I'm interested to see what we can uncover tonight, you know, as a overall consensus between all of us, and hear the stories that we're going to be told today, so that, you know, hopefully it provides a little bit more insight.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I didn't share this before the before we closed in the last show, but I had a quote unquote Bigfoot encounter myself, and I'll share that in just a moment. And I'll say, but you know, it's with a grain of salt. However, it was an experience that I had a few years ago. But let me ask you this: there's a lot of footage out there. There's people claim to have a lot of have filmed and have captured, you know, pieces of hair for DNA. Have you seen any footage? Because I know one of the most famous footage that's out there is that Patterson Gimley film that was, I think it was filmed back in 1967. And that's pretty much what kickstarted the whole hysteria on Bigfoot. Have you ever watched the film?
Mm-hmm. I did. I caught a glimpse of that. I also watched, there was this show, I don't remember on what like channel it was, but it was like one of these sci-fi paranormal channels, and they went out to try and look for Bigfoot. So they went to, I think it was Tibet they went to, and they went up into the mountains and they thought they found something, and they caught something on camera that they were able to show us. But I don't know if it was, you know, Hollywood technique or if it was actually something there that they were able to catch, because it was just timed too well. Like, they set it up, you know, they set up cameras in the area. Stuff went off at night. They went to canvas the areas, you know, the next morning, and then there was no sign of anything being there at all. But they had the footage from the night prior that something was there. So then they went towards, like, later in the afternoon, close to the evening, and then they caught this glimpse of this thing that looked huge and hairy. And they're just like, oh, my God, we just found Bigfoot and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, wait, did we? Did we really find it? Or is it a shadow? Or is it, you know, something else that happened? And, you know, I always play devil's advocate when it comes to things like that, because that's just in my nature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've seen a few things, you know, between YouTube and you know, the shows and, you know, just personal research, even research looking up for, you know, things in regards to getting ready for the show tonight. So, you know, it's an interesting topic.
It is. It's hard. I mean, it's a hard take, you know, that it's very creepy at nighttime. If you're ever in the forest and you're walking around, and I mean, anything could be anything, right? Could be a bear, could be a sick bear, could not. If you want to look into the paranormal realm, could be a spirit maybe that you know, that's roaming around. I mean, there's so many different legends as well. People claim that.
Who's that? I know I heard something.
Yeah, like that. You see how crazy that was?
Wait, you said spooky. I'm sorry. The intern messed up.
I have no control over that, but I just lost my train of thought with that one. Thanks, buddy. But no, like, I know people personally up north, from a particular tribe out in BC, Canada, and they would tell me that their tribe believe in Bigfoot, but they believe it's more of a spiritual realm, or that they can time travel, or they can cross in between their reality and our reality, and that's why no one's been able to see them. Or touch them, or supposedly, because there's also stories out there that people claim they've shot them and they've actually killed some. So a lot of amazing stories on Bigfoot. What made me really think differently about it is, I mean, there's certain people out there that I kind of respect, or I really admire their stuff. You know, there's one story of a guy named Les Strauss. Have you ever heard of him from Survivor Man? He had a show called Survivor Man. Have you heard his story on Bigfoot?
I haven't heard his story, no.
So I heard his story, and I found it pretty interesting, because he was just a guy out there, right? He's one of the first guys to start Survivor shows and go out in the middle of the woods by himself and just live out there and just film himself, you know, on how to survive. And off the show years later, because the show no longer exists, he was asked by Joe Rogan if he ever had an encounter, and he said that one time he was out there in the middle of nowhere, and he's been doing this for years, right? He's a survivalist, and he said he heard what sounded like a giant gorilla, just like making gorilla noises really loud, and some knocks, and he said he's never heard anything like that again. He knows what animals that are out there and they exist. And he's never come across that again. But I think he's gone back because he's heard things again. And then he started doing a few shows on Bigfoot because he was intrigued as to what that could have been. I mean, this is a person that never believed in Bigfoot and then had an encounter himself. So I thought
that
was pretty
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'll share my quick story. I was up in this reservation called Roseau River. Out in Canada, and
that's up in BC.
It's in Manitoba, so it's above Manitoba. And let me tell you, that was a crazy night. I have to say, I'm not gonna go into everything because it was a really crazy spiritual night. And if I share the story, I mean, you're gonna believe that I smoke crack and I don't do drugs, but. My word, it was a really interesting night. I mean, it was just too much going on. We're out in the middle of this reservation. We're pretty much doing some paranormal stuff, right? And I'll say that for another show. And end of the night, we go back to my friend's, his aunt's house, because that's where we're staying for the night. And we're in the backyard just hanging out. And the backyard is completely forest, like it's the woods. I mean, I think if you keep going straight, you eventually hit the border to America, right? The USA. And as we're there, I heard that there were stories that people would say that back there is a Sasquatch crossing. And people have heard them, seen them, and have had rocks thrown at them. And as we're out there in the middle of the night having this conversation, I mean, it's completely desolate. There's no one there. We started, these big rocks just started being thrown at us out of nowhere. And, I mean, I ran because I don't know what's, you're in the darkness and all of a sudden rocks are being thrown at you. I know it wasn't a person. I didn't hear anything. It was just the most awkward thing. And then my friend was like, you see, this is where the Sasquatch crossing is, and this is where they say they're going to their world, and this happens often. These rocks just get thrown out of nowhere. But I have no idea. I have no explanation, though.
That's interesting.
It was that important to him, that was Sasquatch. I'm sorry?
So that's interesting. I know that there's like a Bigfoot crossing sign as well out in Colorado, but I can't say if I've ever heard that it's interactive, like something is there being interactive. But they definitely do have a sign in Colorado, in what is it called, in Pikes Peak Highway, I think it is, in Colorado. They have a Bigfoot crossing sign, and they're just like, you know, this is here for your own safety and stuff like that. So that's interesting.
Well, it is. I mean, I was getting more information, and I was coming across encounters of people. There was a story of this person that once he got out in Canada, out in BC, British Columbia area. His name was Albert Ostman. Don't know if you heard of him. But back in the 1800s, he was a prospector, and he was out there. He claims he was kidnapped by Bigfoot, and he was dragged for days into the middle of the forest. And they didn't attack him, and when he was dropped by Bigfoot, he was hanging out with Bigfoot and his whole family.
No, I've never heard that. I've never heard that story.
Yeah, supposedly that's what happened.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
No,
I've never heard it.
Yeah, he was surrounded by his family. Go ahead.
So, was it ape-like, animal-like, or was it humanoid-like?
No, he says it was like a man, but it was a beast. Like, it was hairy, he was about 8 feet tall. He had like super strength according to what he says. But it was more like a man, but it was almost like at the same time, that's how he reported it, a man beast. And he says that it was about 8 feet. There was about a family of four. And, as he says, there was three adults and then there was a child. They fed him some sort of like sweet grass or something that tasted sweet. And he said there was like a mom or a woman Sasquatch, and she was on gathering all the food and everything. And apparently he gave the male Sasquatch some snuff, and then he was dizzy, and then he was able to escape. Yeah, I don't know. Back then, it's legal.
That's interesting. Well, then that completely refutes the idea of them being able to go from, well, maybe not, going from dimension to dimension. What about the theory of them being like Nephilim? Do you think that that's a possibility? I read that aside from them being this like psychic entity or this creature that can go from like dimensional places, from dimension to dimension. I read that there's belief that they're Nephilim. For people who don't know what Nephilims are like half human, half angel, or a celestial being and half human. What do you think about the idea of them possibly being that?
So they're going to be half beings from, like, I mean, when you say half beings, what kind of half being?
Half human, half anything celestial.
Anything celestial. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever.
Like,
if
is
I,
that
I
why they're hairy and they're big and they're covered? Because,
yeah.
You know, when some people believe that when you go interdimensional and you go to, like, angel realm, that the angels aren't depicted as human size. They're depicted as almost like what the Bible believes or portray Goliath. You know, this large figure that was so much smaller than others. You know, so that is the idea of what angels can be, and you have this gargantuan size, half human looking, half animal looking thing. Maybe it's Nephilim esque, and the hairiness is the way that they, I guess, try to distinguish themselves as different from regular humans.
I mean, it could be a possibility. I mean, anything's possible. It sounds very interesting. Or what if they're just spirits? I mean, I think at one time in North America, they have found proof of a giant ape. I think it was called Gigantopithecus. And supposedly were about 10 feet tall. Maybe it was just spirits running around. I mean, it could be several different things. But I'll tell you what. We do have a special guest, and I'm dying to hear his story, and then maybe you might be more convinced or analyzed. Yeah, definitely. So, and I apologize because I don't want to say your name wrong. How do you say your name again?
You could, if you forget, just say Ku or Kuya. My family does that.
Yeah.
But my full name is Kuyayaku Mambohisiba, and I am Tangino. Of the Arawak Nation.
Beautiful. Thank you. So, good. I was just going to say thank you for blessing us with your presence, because I'm excited to hear what you have to say, but go ahead.
Well, thank you. I really wanted to jump into your conversation, but I know you were asking Stephanie, you were asking Spooky Lou a lot of questions, but the whole Nephilim idea, I totally believe that they're aligned with that type of being, but not that they are Nephilim. But it's, that should not discourage you from, you know, continues to thinking that, you know, the possibilities that maybe they're not, but they're, as I'm going to tell you from my story and my experience, you know, why that is. But, so thank you again for inviting me. American Indian, for those who are listening, and it's the Taino Arawak Nation. My mother and my father are from Quisqueya, Dominican Republic, and my stepfather is from Puerto Rico, Borinquen. In order for me to really give you all a full understanding of my experience without really, you know, giving you the whole entire story, I just to give the credibility and what happened, my credibility, I have to tell you a little bit about myself and how my, you know, my journey began. Let me start off by saying that, you know, very young, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old, I used to have, like, a lot of supernatural experiences, and I was very empathic, very sensitive. I didn't know that then, but when I started learning about the subject, I realized it, not, you know, now. Not that I would see ghosts, but I did have spirits present themselves and extraterrestrials. And they would present themselves telepathically. In my community, in the Taino community, I am a medicine person in Bahike. And I am a peacekeeper as well. I besides empathic abilities, I'm very psychically sensitive. We're all psychics, but my psychic abilities are very, very out there. So growing up, I had these experiences, and they're very bold. And in my teenage years, they were even more bold and pronounced. I grew up in New York City. I grew up in very low income neighborhoods. So sometimes in the 90s is when I met Sanakuri and his wife, Maruya. During that time, I was becoming very active in all supernatural things. I was on my blue road, my medicine road, that we spoke about last week. And I was on my way becoming a medicine person, and I was really, you know, learning a lot. Around that time, I was really like trying not to hone the street personality, or let's say the street skills that I developed growing up. I come from a household that, you know, that was super Catholic because of our upbringing, and also Indian, and also with Santeria being thrown in there, and then there was drugs and alcohol involved. So I didn't have like a perfect upbringing. I don't think a lot of us do, but just to give you a sense, you know, of where I'm coming from, I didn't.
Of course.
So I grew up a lot, you know, with a lot of friends who were gang members. Also, I hung out with friends who were either related to drug dealing and, you know, gang related, or, you know, they were real big clubbers and partiers. So I didn't have like, you know, this eloquent type of life that I'm going to actually, you'll hear me tell my story in a little bit, but it doesn't come from, you know, having such a great life. So my interests were in art. My interest was in the supernatural. I didn't believe, like, I believed that there were extraterrestrials out there, but it wasn't like my go-to or something to research, or Bigfoot either. Like, my knowledge of Bigfoot, the only time that I knew about it was from watching The $6 Million Man and reruns in the late 70s.
Love that show.
And the early 80s. Right? The $6 Million Man with Jeannie Summers. And Top Clutch was like this robot, right? Half robot or half human or half living being. So by the time I met Sanakuri and Maruya, I was working as a volunteer for the Sovereign Dene Nation organization that was trying to stop Peabody Coal Mining Company from taking away traditional elders' land. Back in the late 70s, 80s, into the 90s, Peabody Mining Coal Company was really, really notorious and bad, and the government as well, our government, for pushing traditional natives off of their land and grabbing their land also in very sneaky ways. So that's how I came to meet Sanakuri and Maruya, and that actually kind of sparked some things. Like, I was like on a path to finding more about who I am and my connection to my Indian ancestors. And I was well involved in the Native community in different ways, and at that time I was really like putting in my good 2 cents. Fast forward, I also had I always had dealt with some poverty issues. So during that time, I was homeless for a couple of months, and my family took me in up in Rochester. They had moved from New York City to Rochester. In Rochester, I started to connect a lot with the nature spirits up there, as well as with the Seneca ancestors, the ghost ancestors, because I would go to Seneca Park and the Seneca River out there, and since I was young, they would do this too. As a Boy Scout, I used to go to these campsites, and there would be different types of natives that would come up to me, and they would sit down and talk to me or come to me in the dream time. And the same thing was happening to me as an adult, young adult, in Rochester, New York. And there I had my father who passed away, and that news came like really tragically, and it made me, a very recluse and depressed person. During that time, I was fully involved with the Sovereign Dene Nation. So, I was well aware of the volunteer efforts to help the traditional Diné people to stand their ground while they're, fighting off this coal mining company. So while I was in Rochester and the blow of my father passing hit me pretty hard, I went to the leaders of the Sovereign Nation and asked them if I could volunteer and go out to the res and spend some time there as a sheep herder and help out. So they signed me up for it, and I went.
I don't mean to cut you off, but where was this reservation? I must have missed that.
Navajo Reservation. Navajo Reservation is, using the Four Corners. So there's New Mexico and Shiprock, and then Arizona, and the Black Mesa area.
Okay.
I was more in the Black Mesa area that's where the Sovereign Dene Nation was really concentrating their efforts. But I already had some time in Navajo Reservation when I first started my spirit road, and that was way before that. And I had lived in Shiprock for several months with a medicine person there. But I was going now, I was like 26 years old when I went this time as to help out there the families and as the sheep herder. They signed me up with one family that was very close to the mining facility, and they're the Begay family. When I got there, I was given first. I was introduced to their younger family that were really helping the organization, steer the organization, and really organize all the elders and their families. And so the eldest of the Begay family, I stayed with him for a couple of weeks, and he kind of like with his wife explained to me what it's like living up there, because it was much more secluded. He lived in an area of Navajo Res that was very well populated, but when you get up to the Black Mesas, which is high elevation canyon area, it's everyone's living like really far away from each other. So, you know, they saw that I was very respectful and that I was very well known by the New York City group. And they also, you know, were very interested in my own Native American culture and my people's traditions. And they're very, very nice people. When I was taken to his mother's home, she's Glenna Begay, very, you know, the matriarch of the family, you know, a grandmother at this time. When I got there, it was kind of shocking for me, at least. I didn't expect to see people that look like my family or like us. And she looked exactly like my great-grandmother from my mother's side, my mother's father's side of the family. And I didn't even know her. So I only knew her by pictures. So I'm there. They take me in. They kind of show me, you know, the land. There was another sheep herder there, another volunteer who was leaving, and I was going to take over for her. And so she gave me a little tour and gave me the ropes. She gave me, you know, like the do's and don'ts of sheep herding. So she also was, you know, into, she was a vegan, loved smoking pot. You know, she had dreadlocks. She was this white girl with dreadlocks. And she loved the sage bushes and loved to talk about that. Never talked anything paranormal to me. Or nobody did. At this time, by this time, you know, a lot of the knowledge that I had attained was about, you know, just knowing my place there with the family, how to help, when to get food. You know, usually the grandmother would feed me after sheep herding. She herself, like, you know, took me out to meet other sheep herders and from other families who were Diné, Navajo, and what it was like there. I learned that, you know, when the sheep, that I really need to, like, keep a close eye and know the numbers of sheep that I start up in the morning and what I end with at night. I learned, you know, how to keep them in line or formation, how to get them back home. I learned the etiquette also sharing your spiritual knowledge or your experiences with other Diné people, especially, you know, in a peyote or after a peyote ceremony. And so they're very personal, so you really don't share them. Medicine people are usually the people, you know, you go to for that. So, or your closest parents and relatives, if you really wanted to disclose those things. And so, you know, I had a certain independence there. And my first several weeks I was new to sheep herding growing up in New York City. I'm not new to animals. I have to say that both of my family, my mother's and father's side of the family are farmers, especially my mother's side. And so I used to go to Kiskeya a lot as a child into my teens and spend time out in the farm. So, you know, having these sheep and sheep herding them were a bit of a challenge at first, but it was pretty easy. And I love animals. I guess it was my third or maybe second week sheep herding by myself. There were certain things that were starting to happen. I felt like I was getting, so I spent a lot of my time, I have to say, because you walk with these sheep as they're grazing, and you are basically just walking with them. You're not doing anything. You might have some water with you. You might have a cigar. I had my journal. I had matches so I could burn some sage and do some prayers every now and then. I would do meditation. But growing up in New York City, I knew when you were being followed. I knew, like, when there was trouble or somebody was looking at you. And being empathic and highly psychic, like, I knew somebody was following me. And I said to myself, okay, you know, maybe it's the Peabody Mining Coal Company people.
You know what I call that, right?
What?
I call that crackhead training, because when I was growing up in my neighborhood, I just had to look behind me because I knew I was always being followed. So I understand. I'm in the same way
yeah.
as you are, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, you know, I'm looking around, and, you know, I discouraged from, like, feeling that fear, even, you know, because during that time, also, there was Clinton was the president, and Clinton was, like, signing off bills, giving BIA, like, $3 million worth of military weapons just to get elders off of the freaking, you know, their land for this coal mining company. Wow. So I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, man, they're going to get me, you know? So
let me ask you this. Around what time was it? Was it during the day? Was it on the evening?
Was
it light?
So the sheep always was, you know, I'm taking them out at 7 in the morning until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And sun wouldn't set until, like, 6 or sometimes 7. And it was still, you know, it was still fall. So, and this is Arizona. So it was definitely still sunny. It was always sunny. And this occasion that I'm speaking about that really stood out was sunny. It was so, like, no clouds in the air. And so I'm feeling, you know, I'm saying to myself, all right, so let's not go into fear mode and let's find out if it's a spirit. Maybe it's one of their ancestors, one of the ancestors out here. And so I'm, you know, I'm tapping in, I'm trying to feeling it out. And I'm actually, like, you know, speaking out telepathically, you know, are you an ancestor? And I'm not getting any response. So I just keep walking, and I keep looking behind me, and this was a repetitive thing. That week, though, that 1 week, it was always constant. But then it became, like, in the next several months, it was, like, every now and then.
Was this, like, foresty area or no?
No. So Black Mesa, the you know, Navajo Nation, the Navajo Rez, you don't have forests. You maybe have some areas that have some trees that reach somewhere up to maybe 6 feet, but that's about it. There was one area, and that was another incident that happened to me, but there was this one area where I found out there that had two huge, like, I mean, huge trees, and they weren't even pine trees. I don't know what kind of trees they are. They felt like they were transplanted from New York to Navajo Res. But it was just two trees. But out there, you mostly got sage shrub, which are below your knee. And then you had juniper trees, cedar juniper trees, that were about the largest, maybe 6 feet tall.
The reason why I ask is because I want to envision if you, like, I mean, I haven't heard your story yet. But if you got a clear view or what, or if anything obstruction would have occurred, obstructed your vision. That's why I was asking the surrounding. But go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, no. Everything that I was looking at was shrubs. Where these areas were, they were practically shrubs, all of it. And everything else is rocks and sand. Beautiful,
okay.
I have to add you. But, and then sky. But every time I looked around, you know, and I was in the area a little more closer to the mine, and the, well, it wasn't that close, but it was closest you can get, that I thought there were humans around me. But, I mean, I thought it was a human. I thought somebody, like, either from the Begay family was checking up to see that I was doing my job or, you know, how good of a secret I was, or it was, Peabody Coal Mining Company or BIA. Because you don't see traffic there like we do here. If you do see traffic, you know either who it is or it's some unexpected guest. Like riding their truck, and most people drive out there is the 4x4 or the pickup. So you rarely see trucks, you rarely see sedans, four-door cars. So that was that 1 week, and then I had similar weeks to come, but they weren't as intense, and it didn't happen like frequently, like every day. I always maintained on the sheet. So whatever the number I started with, it's the same number I brought back to the corral and to their home with. I also partook in, helping out with their cornfield that they had there. I got to know a lot of the area there and the lands, and I had favorite places where I would just stop and meditate and do prayers. And sometimes after sheep herding, I used to go out and do prayers. A lot of my time there, I spent, doing that, journaling, reflecting on my past. A lot of the hardships that I went through, my father that passed away, doing a lot of prayers, for a lot of the wrong things that I've done in my past. So I did a lot of communing. So besides that one ET experience that I had that I told you about last week, I got to know, a lot of their relatives, the kids of her children, of the grandmother's children, and all the other people that used to come and do peyote ceremonies at her hogan. And hogans, for those who are listening for the first time, are circled, style designed, I want to say huts, but they're homes. But they're circle, and they kind of look like hut-like because they point. They have a pointy top, some of them. And some of them are made from, traditional ones are made from mud, from the red earth.
And wood.
And fern, juniper branches. And I got to see some of those, too, when I was there.
And the reason why... And I have to ask, because we have another guest also that's on, but I want to get to the point where what happened to you, how you saw Bigfoot. What actually happened?
Well, that's where I'm at now. Sorry, I took a
little...
No,
it's okay. I want to make sure we have enough time for the other story as well. That's why.
Yeah, so this so I got to know, the families that would come through also, their extended people, visitors. Friends of family that used to come by for ceremony. I already knew the family. I think around this time they had asked me to participate in a ceremony, so I did. And it was a good experience. And it was a good experience for them as well. Maybe a month after my first peyote meeting that I did with them, one of the girls, she was turning 16, so they were doing a ceremony for her. And the family was all there, and it was a real big day. I mean, they were like pulling a lot of their resources to make this extra special. And it was a very tiring day for me as well. I stood away from, you know, like trying to help them, and I just went to sleep after a while. And during that first hour of sleeping, I couldn't really sleep because I heard and felt these, it sounded kind of like dogs, yapping. I mean, it was kind of like a growling, but it was like a vicious, like calling and yapping, and it was coming from the cornfield area, which is directly across from the shed that I was living in, and which is, so the shed is also across from the family home, from the grandmother's home. And so after a while I couldn't sleep, and I was really panicking because this didn't feel right either. And I really felt it piercing my soul. So I went over to the family and I explained this to them, and they were like, "Oh, don't worry about it. Those are coyotes. They do that." And I said, "Really?" And they're like, "Yeah, they run in a circle." And they kept me, they were laughing at me also, that I was scared. And I stood with them while they were doing all these ceremony preparations, and the ceremony array had started. I stood there for a little while until like it died down, and it kind of like died down for a little while, those coyotes. And so I went back to the shed, and I eventually fell asleep. And by this time I can really fall asleep to the drumming, the water drumming and the ceremonies and the chanting. And it didn't affect me. And I had, you know, usually I'm a really good lucid dreamer. And I know when I'm having a lucid dream and I'm having a spiritual dream where somebody is coming to contact me. And so in this dream, I'm just like having lucid dreams and I'm just traveling. I was probably like, it felt like I was on some type of safari, you know, like there was a lot of adventure happening. And then all of a sudden, it was just like it came to a halt because I came to my destination. And I fell asleep in a dream. And I wake up and I'm in this black room. And four walls, it felt like a square. And it was literally like black, but there was enough light, I guess, for me to see that there were walls. And I quickly thought to myself, am I awake or am I sleeping? And, you know, what is this? And I touched the wall and I felt like I was awake. And it felt real, and I panicked after a while. And all of a sudden I fell asleep. There was some type of a lull, and then I fell asleep. So when I woke up, you know, it seemed like moments later, and I felt groggy, and I felt myself waking up like I was waking up in my body, and I hear all this chattering, grunting. It felt like speaking. It was very lively. And I look around and my vision is blurry. I know that there's a fire in the middle of what it seemed like I was in a group of people. And the grunt, you know, my vision becomes clearer and I see reddish brown fur. I see kind of people. I kind of feel like I know what they're saying, but it doesn't sound like English. and it sounds very deep, sometimes guttural, and ape-like also at times. And I, you know, I'm focusing on the fire, like in the peyote ceremonies. You know, I've always been taught to, you know, if you find yourself staring at people, stare into the fire, because sometimes your mind goes aloof. And that's what I kind of did in this setting. And but this was a real big, like, fire, campfire, like. And but the fur on these people that I saw was reddish brown. It was long. And I said to myself, oh no, Sasquatch. And I kept on looking around, and I saw faces, and they don't look monkey-like. They look almost human. And my heart is like, I can almost feel like, I even hear my heart like beating. And I'm saying to myself, I'm surrounded by Sasquatch. Sasquatch people. And then at that one moment, I had what seemed like somebody, you know, panic. Like I felt somebody next to me panic, and they got in front of me, and they put their hands over my head, and they looked at me, and the person, the Sasquatch man, I think he felt like a man, he had brown eyes, like big brown eyes, and looked human to me. And he kind of like was pissed, and I felt like I was really scared, and I was like, oh my God, he knows I'm here, like I shouldn't be here. And he looked at me, and he's not like pissed like he's going to beat me up, but he's like upset like this shouldn't happen to have happened. And I looked at him, and I'm like, you know, I'm saying to myself, oh no, you know, he knows who I am. And I wake up. I literally like jump out of my bed, and my heart is racing, and I'm like, WTF, like, what just happened? And I just couldn't believe, like, the sensation all over my body. Like, it felt like I went from one situation to another situation. Didn't feel like I woke up out of a dream. It felt like I just came from one location into the room. And it didn't feel like an out-of-body experience either. Like, if you had out-of-body experiences, when you come back to your body, you really feel like your spirit go into your body. It did not feel like that whatsoever.
Correct. No, I've had those. I've had those dreams where, you know, for sure, it wasn't a dream. It was a message, or you were there, or it was something different than a regular dream. So I totally get what you're trying to explain. That's pretty deep experience that you had. That's pretty amazing, and I really thank you for sharing that. Just hold for a moment. I want to ask you more questions. But just hold, because we also have another guest, and we want to get them in before we run out of time as well. So, I can't even see your name. Sanagori.
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 Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me out there?
I can hear you.
All right, man. I just got connected with our field reporter out in Oregon. His name is Littlefoot. And look what he has for us.
When it looked at you, was it like looking at a human, or did it feel like looking at a wild animal, or?
Actually, it was more like looking at a big ape.
Fascinating.
It's something I'm going to not forever forget. Not ever. But then again, it was over so quick. I don't know if it could run fast enough to catch us or not, but if it had come toward us, we would have run. Well, they got to be real. I mean, so many people have said they've seen them, this, that, and whatever. But once I actually run up on one myself,
right,
I definitely believe it.
I guess that's how you know.
I tell them they're wrong. I tell them they're crazy. These things do exist. Investigate them. Find out where they come from. How come they evade people so much? I mean, it's like they said, you know, how come nobody's ever killed one? They might not have a chance.
Right.
If I'm walking through the woods and this thing pops out of the cedar trees, you know, I can't even get to my gun. You might not have a chance to shoot one.
All right, man. Thank you, Littlefoot from Oregon. Check that out. Good field reporting. That was cool, man. That's right. You got no time to get your gun. All right, Lou. Back to you, man. I got some great stuff later on as well. Spooky
absolutely.
Lou.
Don't we have another guest that also called in and has a Sasquatch story?
Oh, yes. This is a good one. I'm just going to connect our guest now. Hold on. The intern just went to get a cup of coffee. So I got mine in the studio here. It's my good friend Eric. Are you there?
Hey, everyone. How you doing?
Hey, good job, man. Introduce yourself to us, man.
Thank you for putting on the show. It's great. I wrote down my foreword, so we could get through that and get right to the experience if you want.
Okay, yeah, go
yeah,
for
yeah,
it, man.
Eric, share us a little about yourself, where you're from, and yeah, we'll get to the point. Thank you for calling in. It's really appreciated.
For sure.
We really do appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm an artist and a filmmaker, and I live here in New York City. I live in City Island. The Bronx. I'm originally from California. I went to school out there, Walt Disney School for Animation, but they have this weird program called Experimental Animation, and that's what I went into. So I make a lot of independent films. And
amazing.
Was in a key role in my last feature called Apocalypsis, just about little tremors of like visions about the end times, or people would call whatever, many different traditions, many different names for it. But that came out in 2008. It's on Amazon Prime. You can check that out. It's like half live action, half animation. I did.
Well, I'll definitely check it out. Thank you for there. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, you got a great actor there, Sanakori, right? He's a great actor. Yeah, come on.
He's a great actor. I feel like I experienced the movie with you before we actually filmed, though. We had our shamanic journeys there. That was great.
Yeah, that was deep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
so go for it.
You want to hear the story? Because I feel like it's boiling on my mind. It's like I always get chills when I tell this story, even before it's about to begin.
Really quickly, one of our viewers, listeners, just wrote me and said, what is the name of the movie? Because they want to check it out. So what's the name of the movie again?
It's called Apocalypsis. It's like Apocalypse, but it's an S-I-S. It's Greek. It's called Apocalypsis. And, check it out. You can see
it
in like a bunch of places. Amazon Prime, yeah, you can watch it there.
Thank you. Okay, I got the thumbs up. They're going to check it out. Let's get to your story. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so in 2009, I worked at the Soldak Hot Springs. The hot springs were known by several local tribes, such as the indigenous Makah tribe, before an injured man from the tribe was found around like late 1800s by an English prospector who was going through there. And as a gift for rescuing him, he told him about the healing springs. And of course, you know, this, you know, Catholic guy turned into this world famous hot springs, and it burned down in 1918 and then was rebuilt smaller. It's a very haunted place. Anyways, I went to work there and I read a little book as I was working the front desk about the Sasquatch from the Makah people. And at closing that same day, my new friend from the tribe who lives on the res, which is like the northern western tip of Washington. So we were in the whole rainforest area. It's called the Olympic National Park in Washington. It's like a dense rainforest, not necessarily for animals, but for the density of plant matter, has more density than the Amazon. So this place is dense, and it's just filled with mushrooms and fungi. It's a magic place as is. And I found many places like that, when it's like a super spot of nature that's kind of still protected, that things interdimensionally tend to happen. I had some experience in Iceland, but that's a different story. So I was reading this book, and my friend...
I like the concept. I never thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. So we started to talk about it, and she's like super calm, like, yeah, like my people have like ancient stories about our cousins, the Sasquatch people, and we actually have a day where we, you know, bring people off the res. They were invited to see us do all types of things. It was just actually went after this experience, and I could talk a little bit about that. But anyways, so it had a good experience just talking about it. And so about 2 weeks later, I just wanted to get out of there because I was working so much. You know, I was going in the springs every night, and that was really healing too. It's a whole other thing, the earth energy coming out, but might have awakened me to a higher consciousness, like going into my hike. And so I had 2 days off, and I went backpacking, and I had a good hike uphill toward the ridge that looked over Mount Olympus. And I also, at the end of that first day, had an ND, which is near-death experience. But anyways, I camped there until the morning, survived the night. And when I woke up in the morning, I prayed, and I was just so thankful to be alive. And the sun was out. And so I began my hike again, and I hiked to the ridge, and I meditated there and prayed. And I just looked directly out at the mountain and I learned a lot from that, just that meditation. So from there, I had a long journey back because it was a loop trail back to Soul Duck Hot Springs. So basically around sunset, I went to Mink Lake. If you want to write that down, if you want to look it up on the map or close, just to pinpoint where the experience happened, if you want. It's called Mink Lake.
Absolutely.
M-I-N-K. Yeah, so it's about 30 minutes from the hot spring. So I was wrapping up the hike, and when I got to the lake, I felt this really strong presence of being watched. The same feeling I had when I hiked just to Mink Lake, I think it was maybe the first couple days I was there, I hiked up there, and I felt that same feeling again. So I'm like, okay. And it was just so thick with silence, and it was almost like a holy spot. It was like just silent. And then I kept walking because, you know, I had to get back. And so the sun was going down. I'd say it was getting towards like the twilight hour. And about maybe 5 minutes before, my flashlight was done. So I was like, crap, it's getting dark. You have to really book it. About 30 minutes to go. I said, just get there before it gets dark. Took out my little flip phone, my cell phone, to help me when it was starting to get like more dusk, but still enough where I could see like the texture on the trees. And then the hair on the back of my neck just went straight up. And then I knew, I just turned around. And it was that same feeling, but it was actually the Sasquatch. And it was when I was looking left, I mostly didn't see a lot because the light factor. I'm a filmmaker, so I'm like super sensitive to light. But I saw what about be like a 12. I know people talk about 6 or 8, but I sperm it was like a 12 foot. And it looked like it was covered with fur, but I got the feeling more intuitively than I've heard other people talk about this, but that I was lower on the food chain. This is a higher being than me, than a human. And I had like the primal part, like the reptilian part of my brain was like afraid of, like, I got that first feeling of like, I'm the hunted now, you know? And even though I've had sketchy experiences with humans, but this is just a different thing. I had like a lot of respect for what was happening, but it was walking along with me. And then I want to tell people I was cool. I was like going over there and giving it a hug, you know? but that the higher part of me probably wanted to, but the fearful part, I was like afraid because it only had my cell phone, that crappy light, and I was like having filled with adrenaline because of what's going on. So once I was like getting really into the fear, my heart was like really booming, and I was like, whoa, what's going on? So I turned around again, and then in that like moment of not being afraid anymore, it was like looking at me. I'd say it was like 20 yards away still, looking at me, and it just looked at me and kept looking me in the eye, and it just slowly went into a dissolve, into an invisibility, into another dimension. And I was like, whoa. And then I was like, it's just like I am now. Like every time I told the story, I'm filled with the same feeling. And I was just like, I went into like, I just have to get back because now it's like dark, you know, like pretty much dark. And I'm just, so anyways, I was really just going over the whole experience, and I went way past the lodge because it got completely dark, bushwhacking. And I was like, no, because it's like virgin land. I didn't want to like kill all this like, you know, micro diversity. And like, I was really struggling. And then I finally found like the path and made it back. Then the next day, I could only tell one person. That was my friend, and who we had talked about the whole thing. And she said, come with me because we're going to have that day. And so I went and went to the reservation, and everyone was like, no, this is not a big deal. Like this is like, they're all around. There are cousins, you know? And then it was towards the end of the day, I was going to leave, but somebody was drinking from the tribe was drinking and driving, and they died. And they said, I was already in when they told us, I was already in the auditorium where they're having like just more of the dances and the songs for the people off the res. But they said, because of this happening, we have to do a special one. It's only for the tribe. That's like more of like helping move their soul on. So it was really intense, supernaturally. Now it's like having like the Sasquatch like telepathically like talking to me. It was all making perfect sense. And then I went back and I worked there for another month or so. But that's how these things go. And for people like you who are receptive and you're just learning about it, it makes sense. Like I've heard so many theories, like it's, you know, Gigantopithecus, black eye, this like distinct ape from Southern Asia, or like, that, you know, it was a Neanderthals. They're not actually Sasquatch, but they're just people who never interacted with, you know. And then I've heard like the interdimensional thing for all the explanations. So I don't know. You take it from here. That's my story. Thank you.
That's an amazing story. So you know what? I have to say, I'm blown away tonight. I'm blown away because, you know, beginning of the show, I had my own thoughts and theories, but I hear stories that have major similarities. You know, one person was in a different state of mind and meditated maybe, and also got there in a different level by sleeping. And then here you are meditating in the woods, and you probably reached that state of being, and you were able to connect. And I want to be clear on something. When you first turned around, you saw Bigfoot or Sasquatch, right? And then
full on.
And you didn't panic.
Yeah.
You just stood there.
I panicked. Oh, yeah. I panicked hard.
Did you feel that he was going to attack you? Or you just
no.
figured, first, let me walk away?
It was just actually happening. And it was there. Like I said, my body was like, this is like you higher. I just thought immediately in my head, like, this is higher up on the food chain than me, you know? And this is like a more evolved entity. It's not a bear. I actually called a Sasquatch guy in that area, and he like grilled me. He's like, you tell me everything, make a drawing. And he's like, you sure it's not a bear? Sure it's not a bear? This thing is nothing like a bear. It's like a man that was covered with fur and was like, strong spiritual, telepathic, extraterrestrial, interdimensional, telepathic, everything, the invisibility, it was all there. I mean, just that's what I felt. So when it actually shifted, it was just like beautiful, because I finally got, like I said, I was released myself from the fear of like the hunted, the animalistic, you know, thing. And I got spiritual and like in my heart, and I was like, but then it left. So it was teaching me not to be so fearful, because I have issues with fear. So it taught me, it was a lot of wisdom in that moment.
Wow, and many local people in the area say they've seen Bigfoot. Because another thing, with Koo, he was saying he was down in the four corners, I believe. I can't remember right now, but I've heard that that's a major Bigfoot sighting area.
Definitely.
As well. So, is the area that
they're supposed to be
in,
coming out of the earth, like in wormholes, and like they're inter-D, and there's like the inner earth, and I know the Navajo people say that they originally came out of the earth. And so for them to see Sasquatch over there, like I had some experiences in Sedona too, and the whole area, the four corners. I went farther north. I'm making a film.
Yeah.
The next film is called Twilight Park, and it takes place in the four corners. So there's connections. I feel like some stuff happened in Mount Shasta. There's different places, one in Mount Kurama in Japan I've been to, like these, they call power spots. They seem to be interconnected, you know. I study a lot of science, so people might think this is a crazy story, but anyone who knows me, I study physics. I'm a holographer, and I meditate on stuff all the time. And basically all the time they're finding out about lava tubes in the earth or underground seas, you know, full on like
okay.
Published in Nature. The fact that it's completely out there is because there's a spiritual component. So like the mainstream media and things like that can't like commodify it, because they're like, they can be here in our dimension, like full on, and then they can shift into the next one. So they just probably been around longer than, you know, all the different types of humans, or possibly it's just an ancestor, like an ancient cousin. But that all makes sense to me. The spiritual part is maybe they're just, are interdimensional beings that sometimes, like I think somebody was talking earlier about the Nephilim and angels, like angels are seen and things like that. But this really seems to me like almost half an animal, a highly evolved animal, if you call like humans animals too, and then also like this ability that I've never seen before in all my experiences supernaturally with transitioning into invisibility. Like that was really something else. When that happened, I just stayed there for a little bit and made sure that was actually happening, and then kept walking because I had to get back. But yeah.
You know, wow. Eric, you know, Eric, one of my teachers, Lakota woman, Caroline Wing, she used to run a lot of ceremonies in Bear Mountain. And she used to talk about Sasquatch as the guardian of the keeper of the forest. She will watch over the forest. And she used to tell us stories about medicine people going up there and like charging money and like tourists and all that stuff. And then Sasquatch will come and scare everybody away, you know, like, you know, because it's
there's
you
a
know,
radio show that I listen to called New York Skywatch. On WBAI, it's on late at night, and that led me to like a deep search on YouTube where I finally found.
I'll
send it to you. Awesome video of the Sasquatch singing to people that are nearby. They're like had been just going out there for years, and like full on even video of its face, and then just this beautiful singing, and the throwing of the stones, of course, too. But it's out there. It's just.
They're spiritual beings.
I don't know. And they're smart too. They don't want to be found. They want to be found, but with loving people who are on, like you were saying earlier, that vibration, like they're meditating or they're connecting to the earth, and they get on that where it's not a fear vibration or like they're trying to capture them for a TV show, you know.
Cool.
I think they have a really strong message to us that. They went this way, and they're in tune with nature, and they only give back to nature. And mm-hmm. then there's us who are like the ones who got lost that when it, like, I'm not saying everyone on the phone, but I'm just saying like the kind of Western civilization and capitalism that's destroying the earth. So I feel mm-hmm. like there'll probably be more and more instances of connections. People are waking up as time goes on rather than the other way around. You know, if I told somebody the story in a bar in like Manhattan, which I've done,
yeah.
they're like, you're crazy. It's too far out, you know? But like I said, yeah. when you're actually there, I wouldn't have had to have seen Sasquatch to feel like I had just had as much of a spiritual empowering time. Just being around all the fungi, which is like this ancient intelligence too, that, you know, is like surrounds the planet and has its own thing, own connection with Sasquatch and whatnot. So yeah, it's an incredible mm-hmm. world, incredible time to be alive.
It is.
Yeah. What?
Roll credits.
Just confirm what you're saying about their, their intentions and what, you know, what they look for in terms of human interaction. When I finally came around to, and this was like almost maybe 10 years after my experience, I started doing research. And when I finally moved here, actually now by this time it was maybe 15 years, I moved here to Philadelphia and here in Pennsylvania. I never found, and thank you for sharing your experience, because I don't hear many telepathic experiences. And
yeah.
When I was looking for telepathic experiences, the only one I found, and you probably heard of him already and probably maybe even talked to him up in Washington, Kiwani Lesteritis. I reached out to him. He has several books out called, you know, Psychic Sasquatch. And I told him my story, and because I still, even my interactions today that I still have with the Sasquatch people, I've been having them, and I didn't know what to make of them, especially that one experience. And then he said to me that when they saw me, that, you know, they were following me, and I was doing all those meditations and everything, you know, they saw that I was one of them, and that I was one of them also in a previous lifetime, meaning I was a Sasquatch.
Oh, cool.
So I'm one of their family. But then, and from what I've been reading, it's exactly what you're saying, in terms of, you know, the human connection. You know, they're not going to mess around with people, and they're avoiding people who are not spiritually evolved or walking a spiritual path.
Yeah. I feel like it was like X-ray spiritually. They could just see all the, like, into the person and know.
Right. They're seeing multidimensionally, and they could see more than what we can. And even as spiritual folk like ourselves, we know who to interact with and who not interact with, who's not spiritually evolved.
Excellent.
That's true, right? I love the fact that you shared that story at a bar. That sounds like something I would do. I love it.
I tell different people this story to kind of gauge sometimes how they'll react. I've gotten a full variety, you know.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Some people are receptive. Some people are like, man, this guy's nuts. I'm sure you get all kinds of reactions.
Also, but, like, I think as I had the near-death thing, that like it was almost like when I've had a couple of those, I mean, really abducted, but that when that happens, it's almost like you're already seeing how things really are spiritually very clearly, mm-hmm. because you just came so close to dying, that then these opportunities can happen, like where I've seen, like, you know, I've seen a lot of things. Luis and I could talk about whatnot, but yeah, it's just when you get out of that frequency and you get more into maybe your career, your daily jobs, everyday things, you can kind of tune out to that, and it seems more, the more you tune away from that, the more it seems far-fetched, and you question, you know, things like that. Then you get more in tune, and it seems more natural, you know?
I agree. What about you, Creepy Steph? Anything to add?
Well, first, I want to thank both of our guests for sharing
with
us. Thank you. Because, you know, it's not easy to come out and have discussions when you know that the general idea or the general perspective is not likely to be positive. So thank you guys for coming
right.
and joining us, you know, in this space and being open to sharing with us. You know, I really appreciate it from both of you. I really like how the story, exactly what Lou said, how the stories, both of your stories, while they're completely different areas, completely different situations, they still have so many connecting points and pieces to it. Because that does add validity to it. You know, that does allow
right.
the viewers to be able to create a picture in their mind where they can start to connect the dots and deep dive into the idea of, well, it's possible, you know, and it provides an open space for other people to be able to say, you know what, I have a similar story. And let me share it now, and let's see what we can come up with after that as far as a way to really be able to identify what is going on, you know, what it is that's happening,
yeah.
and, you know, possibly even figuring out a way to make it seen as acceptable, you know, since it's so taboo in some conversations in some places. So, you know, I really appreciate that. I definitely do.
Great show. I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, I was just going to add that, you know, in the beginning, like I said, in the beginning of the show, you know, I always pitch a Sasquatch as the same realm, right? For lack of better words, a physical being. I've heard for years, especially from my native friends, that, like you said, they're interdimensional, that they can go from this world to the next. After hearing these two stories, I'm convinced even more so, you know, on the fact that this is something that we just don't understand, and it makes a lot of sense why we can't find a dead Sasquatches. Maybe it's just something that can be materialized at will, or something that even at a higher level that we just don't understand. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You really changed my perspective on it as well, both of you. Thank you.
Can I?
Thank you.
Could I just add something? And thank you, Lou. This will kind of like, I think, take a notch off of Gigantopithecus and maybe the Nephilim, but Gigantopithecus and the Nephilim definitely add to this. But if you read and follow the Vedas and the East Indian traditions and stories of Hanuman, you will see that Hanuman is essentially they said themselves, the Sasquatch, that Hanuman is a Sasquatch. He is part of that family. But the story in Hanuman and how Hanuman got to know Rama, that's the story you really, you know, if you're interested in learning more about that. They've been in here, and the Vedas, you know, I've always said, they've been here, just like the Navajos, 28,000 years. For the last 28,000 years or more. And, you know, if you look at that, and you look at those stories, and you look at the stories of Hanuman, you'll learn a lot more about Sasquatch, and it reveals, and Hanuman reveals a lot more about Sasquatch than we're all, you know, even like the scientists or the guys out there on the Bigfoot expeditions, know. Hanuman is an interdimensional being, and his people also, because it was just not Hanuman during the time of Rama and when he was here. And became known as Hanuman and revered. But during Hanuman's time, you know, he did all those things that Sasquatch does right now and more.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that for our viewers. I mean, for our listeners, keep saying viewers, sorry. For our listeners that are interested in getting more information, I certainly will. I really do appreciate that. I'm not sure how much more time we have left, but I do want to say I thank both of you very much for sharing once again. I also want to give a shout-out to some of our sponsors who've helped. I want to give a shout-out to Unknown New Mexico. So if anyone wants to go on Facebook and follow them, Unknown New Mexico. And, of course, there's Rachel. She's in Ojibwe Cosmetics, if you want to look her up. It's Ojibwe Cosmetics. And also, if you want to go to my page, Spooky Apparel. Spooky, I am off tonight. My apologies.
Shameless plug.
Paranormal.
See what happened?
Oh, I'm sorry. I am off tonight. But yeah, it's got a little blood sugar kicking in. I don't know. Where's Santa Cody? I'm not sure what's going on.
Because
you said
you
had some special.
Okay.
Did he find?
No.
Oh, there we go.
No. I was on the line with our field reporter, Littlefoot. He found some songs, so maybe we can end the show. There's at least 6 minutes worth of music that Littlefoot found. That's folk music about Bigfoot, Sasquatch. So if you guys want to tune in and hear the songs, that's great. You know, but here let's end the show with these beautiful songs. What do you think? Some of them so not so nice, but it's all right. Bigfoot can take it.
Well, me and Lucille, we were feeling good, so we got us a cabin way back in the woods. We stepped out for a breath of air, met an 8-foot man all covered with hair. Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, stole the woman I love and gone. Well, it looked like a step right out of a cave. Never had a haircut, never had a shave. Had big red eyes, made a mournful moan. But something he had really turned her on. Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, stole the woman I love and gone. Well, I lit out in hot pursuit of this 8-foot man in his birthday suit, tearing up the forest with 10-foot stride, sweet Lucille running by his side. Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, stole the woman I love and gone. Now that was the last they were ever seen, so I sold my story to a magazine. I hope they're happy living way out there, cause it made me a heartbroken millionaire. Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, stole the woman I love and gone. Come on. Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, Bigfoot stole my baby, stole the woman I love and gone.
Bigfoot's on the ground. Bigfoot's this legend has grown about this big hairy man that walks all alone. A mountain monster, 10 feet tall, called Bigfoot. From the tales of the traders and trappers to the image on Indian walls. From the Bear Paw Mountains of Montana to the signs of the great Shastas. From the Flatheads to Blackfeet and the Shoshones, he must have seen them all. And when the sun goes down in the northwest woods, if you listen, you can hear him call.
Radio.com. Thank you, Spooky Lou. Every Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Spooky Lou and Paranormal Show.
Who's that? I know I heard something. But I cannot hear my own voice. What is that? What am I trying to do? Oh, I heard that. There's nowhere to go. Help me. I need some help. Help me. Oh my God, I heard that. What are you doing?
Don't do that.
I'm so scared. Help me.